So Doug, do you like Friday?
Do I like Friday?
Just the day, as in the day of the week.
I guess. I mean, I get pretty excited about the weekend coming up.
Do you like to have fun?
Mean, yeah, it's Friday. It's a pretty great day in general. It's Friday.
Well, then I think we have a video for you, Doug. And today, we should mention we're recording this on Monday, March 14th. And I always am interested when music videos kind of become little viral hits on Twitter. A few weeks ago, we had that with the new Britney Spears video, kind of the same day as the new Radiohead video. And today, March 14th, we also had a video climbing up the social conscience of everybody for another reason, because it was an odd video and an awful video. It's called Friday by Rebecca Black, and let me just play you a few seconds of this. So, if you haven't seen it, you have to go out and see it, because people make awful videos all the time, but rarely does an awful video come across our paths that is this just ridiculously epic. And there's a few things that really defy explanation, such as this woman, Rebecca Black's inability to. Or just this constant questioning of where she's going to sit in the car. Is she going to sit in the back seat? Is she going to sit in the front seat? This is something that comes up over and over in the video.
Well, I guess I gotta ask you what you think, because there's plenty of, awful singers, little girls who sing with no talent, with crazy overproduced videos by directors with the same lack of talent, and they're all over YouTube. So what makes this particular one so special?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I think there's a formula to this sort of thing. Because if you, I don't know if you remember a video called Video Games by a band called Blackout Band.
I do.
And that also kind of attracted the same sort of, mocking and borderline disgust of the music of people who watch music videos. And the reasons were a few that kind of share between the this video, or the Blackout Band Video Games video, and the Rebecca Black Friday video. And one of them is the sort of phantom appearance of parents with money behind it. They're not just sort of kids out there making a music video because they are so feel, the creative urge, and they do it with just whatever resources they have around. Usually it's a very sort of high production, high gloss video, and there's really, objectively looking at it, there's no way that music sales or any sort of record label interest would actually sort of power that or make this video exist.
So you're blaming the parents.
I'm blaming the parents for.
Because, of course, little kids, their parents are like, no, you are talented, Rebecca. No, seriously, I wrote these lyrics, just memorize them and just get in the back seat. Is that basically how you see this whole thing playing out? And of course, as like Rebecca, this child, is she's just like, of course, my parents think I'm talented. Look at this video crew. It was clearly expensive, and so they must be telling me the truth.
Yes, and it turns out that the company behind this, known as Arc Music Factory, is sort of notorious for doing this.
It doubles as Rebecca's PTA, just at her school.
They make these awful videos, and I'm kind of debating of whether to allow them on filmed insert, but they're technically music videos. They're songs, and they're produced music videos. So one of them is called "Can't Get You Out of My Mind" by Kaya. It gets Kaya. And they're all sort of young girls. I think they attract girls between, specifically, explicitly between the ages of 13 and 17 to go to Los Angeles and record these songs and these videos. And I think, unfortunately, poor Rebecca is going to have this following her around for quite a while.
She is a viral sensation.
Yeah. I mean,
probably only like 25 or 30 kids from her high school are viral sensations. So,
but the thing is, it's different than like a Chocolate Rain kind of thing, because there the guy's kind of under his own power,
I think that the Chocolate Rain guy is in on the joke
a little bit. I don't know. Have you seen Tae Zonday and some of his TV appearances? He seems oddly really into what he's doing.
No, but here's what I think happened. I think that he thinks that it's funny, but he thinks that it's funny for different reasons.
Right.
He thinks that it's like smart funny, and everyone else thinks it's ridiculous funny. But you do notice, to get back to these other videos, I do notice a trend from the ones that are popular,
mm-hmm.
from this sect of, you know, ridiculously overproduced, lack of talent, child music videos. Because, you know, like as bad as Miley Cyrus type music is, you know, the production value is not only high, but it's quality. And like their music videos are well produced. Their music, right. The background music and stuff is like Timbaland and like, you know, and established, you know, music producers. It's not, you know, Jesse. like it's not like just a dude, you know, in GarageBand like pulling loops and having her sing about, you know, having a little kid sing about Saturday. But the two things that you always get with the popular videos like of this variety are lyrics that are clearly written by adults. Like Miley Cyrus, her lyrics use slang and stuff like that, but it's accurate. Like the slang and stuff that you find in these fake videos, these cheesy ones, is like slang that adults think kids use. Right. And, you know, and then the other thing you get is just complete dedication from the kid performer in and belief in the character. And I think that if you get those two things together mixed with overproduction divided by talent, you have the makings for a 3 million view video.
Can we get that in a formula?
I think that formula exists, and it's being
like a mathematical formula.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter.
Like in the beginning of The Social Network, where they write it in the window.
Yeah, isn't that code though?
No, that's an algorithm.
Isn't that an algorithm though?
Gender day was Thursday. Today it's Friday.
So, Adam, do you know what I like?
I was going to guess, but I'm just going to say no.
I like music videos with a narrative structure.
Me too. I like those too.
Like music videos that have a story.
I like stories.
You know, I also like the music videos that don't have a story, but, you know, I really like music videos that, like, that just have a narrative story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about it? You feel the same way, right? Is that what you're saying to me?
I'm saying that, yeah, I do enjoy videos with a narrative story.
And redundancy aside, there are, I would say, few directors that do music videos with a narrative story better than one Ryan McNeil.
True. And that's very convenient because that also happens to be the man who we're interviewing on the podcast this week.
Oh, you're kidding. So do you mean that aside from our in-depth discussion about narrative story music videos that we have on our on our podcast, one of the best.
That's true, and you may know his work from two videos for Grum, Through the Night, and
savvy listeners will realize that actually Grum Through the Night was my week two pick of the week. Look at how these things happen. I pick someone on pick of the week, they end up on our show. I need to start picking some awesome people for pick of the week, and maybe they'll end up on our show.
That's the way it's been working so far. And it's been Grum, Can't Shake This Feeling, Grum Through the Night. He's also done a video for the Fruit Bats called The Ruminant Band, for Debate Team, songs called My Expertise, the Radar Brothers, Brother Rabbit, and for Jason Little, songs called I Am Lost. And they're all on the site. Just search for Ryan McNeil. That's two L's.
So I'm looking up his name here. Two L's in Ryan.
Yes.
No. Two L's in McNeil.
Ah.
Come on, y'all.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Ryan McNeil. I am a director of music videos. I have, in the past, directed with a group called the General Assembly. We've done some videos for, I guess we'll get into that later, but for Grum, the Fruit Bats, Jason Lytle of Granddaddy, to name a few. Is that a good setup?
That is definitely a good setup. And in terms of, you know, Doug and I have been watching your music videos. We got them all on the site. You know, we love your style. We love the videos. And one of the things we really like about them is they're, you know, more than a lot of other videos we've seen, they have a really narrative style to them. They're almost like little short films. Is that something that, you know, you consider part of your style or just thing you go for?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we intentionally went with the more narrative-based music videos just because, I don't know, you don't see as many of those these days for whatever reason. I think there was a time when there were more narrative music videos being made, but I think a lot of people have moved away from that style in favor of, you know, cool graphics and all that, and I do like that stuff, but I think... with our directing team, we always like the narrative style. It's also sort of almost like our way of being short filmmakers without actually making short films. It's sort of their own kind of complete storylines all into a nice little music video package.
Now, you mentioned you had made things with the General Assembly. Are you guys still together?
I actually split from the General Assembly about a year ago, I guess. We're still really good friends, but so the General Assembly was three of us. It was me and then two guys named Adam. So the Adams are still working together, and then I left to work on my own projects independently. It was totally amicable. We still are good friends. They're doing cool stuff. I'm hopefully going to do cool stuff without them. But yeah, it's just kind of an inevitable thing with a lot of directing teams you see out here, people starting off together and then kind of moseying off on their own.
So as a team, do you guys just kind of share the responsibilities? Did you guys get together and just kind of throw ideas out there, or was there, you know, certain roles that you took on in every video?
I think the way we divided up responsibilities was for any given project, there would be sort of a point man on the project spearheading that one. And then, you know, during the writing process, the other guys would just sort of, you know, help in any way they could. There weren't clearly defined roles during that process. And then on set, it's just kind of a free-for-all. You know, the reason I think that it worked well, even though three people is kind of, people would think it would be super chaotic getting direction from three people, we would almost like each direct the video like as we saw it in our heads. So, you know, we would shoot the scene maybe my way, and then we would go back and do the same scene again from one of the other guys' perspective. So it's kind of cool. At the end of your shoot, you have some like pretty drastically different takes on the video. And then in the post process, you just kind of get to sit down and be like, this worked better. This, you know, I like your idea on this. I think my version of that looked better. So yeah, it's a weird melding of different directing styles that kind of all fit into one video.
Did you guys always agree on what was the best angle after the fact?
Yeah. You know, I guess there were never any knockdown, drag-out moments. I don't know. We're all passive-aggressive enough that we can just kind of quietly, you know, disagree with the other people and just kind of hate them for their choices. No, I don't know. It never really got weird in the post process. I think partially because we've always had a really strong editor who's very opinionated too. So it's kind of like when you have that many people in a room who are calling the shots, somehow, I don't know, you just have to leave your ego at the door, I guess. But yeah, we always found a way.
So there's a lot of like reoccurring themes in a lot of the videos. Like most of them, they all seem to take place not in this era, like, you know, either the 80s or, you know, sometime around there. Are those themes, were they all agreed on by the group, and is something that you all shared as an interest and in kind of wanting to work in that area, or does that come from one or the other of you? Or
you know, I think it's definitely a shared interest that we have with sort of poor technology, for one thing. Just kind of love the look of how that old stuff kind of came off. And I know there's a lot of people who are replicating the kind of 80s thing and doing it really well. But I don't know why we were so drawn to that specific thing. Like, I was such a raised on 1980s like cable and like bad Oklahoma television. And shows like, I don't know, you know, Tim and Eric do like a great job of sort of mocking that local TV kind of thing. But yeah, there's something about that aesthetic that's just sort of magical in its own awful way. And then, you know, you run into the thing too, that you've done one sort of period piece, and then whether you like it or not, that becomes sort of your thing. And so when people are looking for music videos down the road, they're like, oh, well, here's a group that can do old looking videos. So that's not necessarily a bad thing to have fallen into, but it definitely did become our thing, I guess.
Well, looking at your catalog, you know, there's a lot of variety, you know, in the subject matter, definitely, and also in the sort of the pacing and the content of the videos. I thought it may be good to get into a few of them directly. I think one of the ones that people, you know, maybe one of the more popular ones that you guys have that you put out is the Grum Through the Night video. So I was wondering if you could kind of describe that video for us and describe where that came from.
Sure, yeah. So working with Grum came about in kind of a weird roundabout way. We've never met Grum. I'm sure he's a very nice dude. I think he's Scottish. But his label actually reached out to another director named Keith Schofield, who's a friend of mine, just because Keith does awesome videos, and they wanted one of his kind of quirky, funny, viral-esque videos. But at the time, Keith, I think, was working on maybe the Beck Charlotte Gainsbourg video. Anyway, he was in the middle of something major for a lot larger budget, and he had to pass on the project, but he passed them along to me and the team. So that was actually the story with how we first met Grum on the prior video, Can't Shake That Feeling. So Through the Night was our second video that we had done for Grum. I guess they like the quirkiness and weirdness of the first one enough that they gave us a second shot at doing a video for the guy. So the
food porn video comes prior.
Was, Yes, that was
so. That's actually pretty awesome that that one comes first. So it's like you're not already comfortable with the Van. That's what you're leading with. I'm actually really, really pleased with that revelation. Not to cut you off.
Yeah, no. And the whole brief on that first video, there was really not one. It was, we want something that's fun, funny, viral, were the three words. And sometimes it's really difficult when people just ask for something that's funny and viral, because it's just like, I don't know, what can you do that's viral? If anyone had, you know, the secret formula, we'd all be making viral videos. But
cats.
I don't know. That was a weird interpretation of what something viral could be. And it's gotten some plays on YouTube, so, you know, it's no Charlie bit my finger.
It's no Charlie bit my finger. We'll go chronologically then, and if you can first tell us then, like, how do you come up with an idea like the Can't Shake That Feeling video? Because there's no way that all comes up at once, that you're gonna have
right.
you know it's got to come in waves. So why don't you talk about that one first, since it came first chronologically?
Yeah, with that video, man, there was a lot of rejected ideas, some actually really funny ideas that didn't get used on that video that maybe I shouldn't share, just in case people listen and want to steal the ideas. But that I think we had kind of toyed around with the idea of competitive eating. And there's something funny about competitive eating by itself. And then in order to make something viral, I think all you have to do is put girls in bathing suits, I think is what we decided. Or kind of skimpy American Apparel attire. So that part of the video kind of like seemed to write itself in a weird way. But then it didn't seem weird enough, sort of. Like, I think for us, it's always like, well, if we can come up with something that sounds like it's going to hook viewers visually, like, and just that tagline, like, hot girls competitive eating, people, you just tell people that, and they're like, oh, I got to see that video. But that didn't seem like it had enough sort of legs to last for the entire video. And that's where the whole sort of subplot came in with the George C. Scott-esque character who plays the father of one of these young girls. I don't know how that idea came about. It's I'm blanking on the name of the movie that was based off of. Where is it here? Yeah, there's a George C. Scott movie from, sorry, give me just a moment and I'll tell you.
No, we're looking stuff up all the time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hardcore. Hardcore is the name of the movie that was based off of.
I feel like it's like a movie that I've seen in film school or something like that. It's
yeah.
I feel like that was like a father seeing his daughter in a porn. It's something I've seen. It might have just been in a porn. And I might have seen that. It was just one of those porns that's awesome. And
The story of, Hardcore, I think you kind of nailed it there. It's like a runaway girl finds herself in the porn industry. And then George T. Scott plays the father who goes off looking. And we really, like, referenced that movie pretty heavily. Even kind of stole a few shots pretty directly from that.
Sweet.
But, you know, it's a good obscure enough reference that we're not going to get a lot of people spitting venom at us online for stealing some shots from Hardcore.
Maybe now.
Yeah. we did that one first and didn't know how the label would like it, but I guess they and came back for a second time for the other Grum song we did. Oh, Through the Night. Thank you. Sorry, Grum. Yeah, so they came back with Through the Night. And originally their, like, they kind of had an idea of sort of a Top Gun-esque kind of 80s thing. I think they said something about Chips, maybe, the TV series. But it really was not a really fully developed idea, just sort of we want to do something 80s with this because the song obviously sounds very 80s. And yeah, just kind of bouncing ideas back and forth, kind of locked into that. The guys being so extremely heterosexual that they cross over into being extremely gay with each other. We got these two guys who are improv comedians who we've worked with in the past. We knew they would probably play off one another well. And yeah, I think they did. We're really happy at the end of the day.
Now, I read that you had shot this in 2 days. Is that right?
Yeah. It was like a crazy number of locations, but we shot it in 2 days. The bulk of it was shot at like a... it was like a closed down boys home for like troubled youth that was somewhere south of Los Angeles. And that location was amazing. It was like tons of acres of just weird buildings. Like the school gymnasium was there, like the weird locker room scene, the stuff at like the police station. It sort of provided its own art department too, because they had, when the boys' school closed down, they sort of left a lot of the stuff behind. So
how'd you guys get in there and get access to that?
That was actually one of the awesome things we learned on that shoot, is there are a lot of, in Los Angeles, a lot of state-owned facilities that you can shoot at for pretty cheap. I can't remember how much that location costs for the day, but it was incredibly inexpensive for how enormous and how many looks it gave. I want to say it was something like $500 for the day. But yeah, it gave us like 80% of the video. Just there were so many different buildings and looks inside there.
Wow.
Yeah. We thought that video was like going to be... It was definitely in jeopardy day one, probably like 3 hours in. Eric, the shorter dude in the video, we were doing a scene that made the cut where they're like wrestling over a basketball.
Man, that's my favorite part.
Yeah, so we're shooting that scene, and one of the Adams yelled out something about climb on top of him. And the larger guy climbed on top of the smaller guy. And I think there was an audible pop where you could hear the guy's ribs like snapping. Uh-huh. Like he full on like broke a rib on the first day of shooting, like 3 hours into the shoot.
Oh my God.
So I always noticed this when I watched that video, but if you go back and like some of the dance scenes, he's really kind of dancing pretty gingerly because he's just like in excruciating pain for the next 2 days of that shoot.
Oh, that's great. Great commitment from him. That basketball scene is fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, we wanted to also cover some of the other videos in your catalog.
Wait, before
oh,
we
wait,
do,
hold on. Yeah, go
let
ahead,
me
Doug.
Let me do this. Let me ask about this. Because he's in the Through the Night video. There's a guy he's the nurse in the Through the Night video, and uh-huh. he's also the referee in the debate team video. And he's in another one too, and I can't remember. And I just have to know who that guy is.
Yeah, I'm really excited that you're the first person to ever ask about who that is, because yeah, he absolutely is like our one recurring actor that we've probably used in more projects than anything else.
His name is
Jeff Average. I thought for a long time his name was Jeff Average, and I thought that was the coolest name ever. But it's actually Average. I can't remember how we met the guy, but he's super nice guy. We're actually working all with him on a separate project right now. That's a TV series that he has put together called Zen Detectives. But what? Anyway.
No, yeah. you can talk more about that if you want.
Detectives is man, I don't know what to say about it. I feel like I shouldn't say too much because
no, you don't have to give anything away. Sounds awesome.
At this point in time, we're going to use Kickstarter to try to help Jeff raise the money to. He wants to shoot a trailer for the thing. Or the title sequence, I guess, actually. So, yeah, we're going to try to shoot that for him. But it's a Charlie's Angels-esque story with all of the angel-type girls having weird sort of spiritual powers that they tap into. It's a pretty out-there storyline that we're very excited to be helping Jeff shoot the project.
Is he in it?
Yeah, he plays himself.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah, so look for Jeff in our videos. He's the older gentleman with the really sweet hair. But yeah, he's been there since day one. I think it was actually these videos, being in these videos, sort of sparked this this newfound need to be more creative and make TV and stuff. So
we're happy. Deservingly so. I think he deserves it. Yeah, what is he? The pallbearer, maybe in the Fruit Bats video too, or something.
Yeah, he's in the Fruit Bats video. He's also in the Jason Lytle video. He just sits in a booth, and with beautiful golden hair.
Majestic.
Yeah, he's in almost every single video. Now that I think about it,
he looks exactly the same too. Like he
does,
same haircut, same mustache.
And like, I would say 90% of the time, we don't have to do anything to his wardrobe. He just shows up looking like perfect, camera ready. And we just, you know, sit down and do his part. Yeah. I mean, I remember the debate team video where he plays a referee. There was not a touch of wardrobe that went into anything with the guy. He just showed up and we just threw him in there. He's great like that.
You hit the jackpot with him.
Now, you've worked on, you know, on your bio on the Moore website, it mentions you've worked in, you know, documentary TV, which is a background we haven't come across yet for music video directors. I think it comes across definitely in the Radar Brothers Brother Rabbit video, and that it seems to have a much more kind of a different style than some of your other videos. It seems like it's shot on film. It's a much more contemplative video. I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of insight on, you know, where that comes from, and if that does it have anything to do with, you know, your background in doing these TV documentaries. I know it mentions, you know, you were on, you know, you were shooting in, you know, West Texas oil fields, which is, you know, the area where the video takes place.
I personally I've done a lot of this. It was a weird world that I didn't expect to fall into, but I somehow found myself doing this sort of docu-reality TV. It was Deadliest Catch on the Discovery Channel. I was a cameraman on that show for a couple of years. And then went on to, there's another show called Black Gold that sort of tried to replicate, you know, the Deadliest Catch danger, but in an oil field setting, which didn't really work quite as well. But still, it was a really cool place to get to spend a few months out in West Texas working with these, like, I don't know, people in both those industries are absolutely crazy. They're like, you know, just the hardest living dudes you could imagine. But yeah, the Brother Rabbit thing, I think, was a combination of having worked on that show and then also having grown up in a super small town in Oklahoma. Actually, another one of the Adams in the General Assembly, Adam Litke, he is also from the same small town that I'm from, of Houlton, Oklahoma. And it's basically just an oil town. That's like, you'll just find like oil and cattle there and like a Sonic and a Pizza Hut. That's all we have. But Yeah, so we, for the longest time, we wanted to go back and shoot something in Oklahoma. And I think we had, like, that project was one of those ones where we definitely reached out to the Radar Brothers. We've liked them for a long time. And we were, that was kind of an early video for us where we're still kind of building the reel. And I guess the advantage there is that you can kind of pick the subject matter and pick which bands you think are going to be the right band for the visual that you want to show. And yeah, when we reached out to the Radar Brothers, they gave us a couple of possible shots that we could use, that being one of them. And it just seemed to fit pretty perfectly with this idea that we'd had for shooting out in the oil field and doing kind of a day in the life of an oil field roughneck. And I remember, as far as that being like a different style, it is kind of a humbling experience, I guess, whenever you go from doing really sort of quirky, funny videos that you are you know they're going to be pretty universally accepted. People are going to find something funny in them, hopefully, versus doing a very, like, serious, dramatic video. It's sort of, I don't know, it's, like, harder to show your friends for the first time after you've done one of those kinds of videos because you don't know how people are going to respond, but fortunately, people seem to like that.
Did the Radar Brothers like it?
Yeah, the Radar Brothers loved it. It was, actually, we sent it to them and then didn't really hear anything for a long time, and then I just, like, there's a club out here called Spaceland, and I just recognized the singer from the Radar Brothers at Spaceland. I was like, oh, that's Jim Putnam. We have to go talk to him. So, and it was at that point he went on and on about how much he loved the video. I think he was drunk at the time, though, so I'm pretty sure he's seen the video. And I think he liked it, and it wasn't just the alcohol talking, but...
Still counts.
Who knows?
Yeah, it totally still counts.
It still counts. But, yeah, no, I was glad we did that project because that opened the door for the Jason Lytle video, I think was the next up for us. And Jason Lytle happened to be friends with the guys from the Radar Brothers, so it works. I actually like that. You do a video for a band you like, and it opens up more doors for bands you also like.
Now, how did that chain lead you to the Fruit Bats?
You know, I think, oddly, they're all somehow tied in, those indie folk rockers. But... Yeah, I think the Fruit Bats video is actually another one that we sort of cold called them. It wasn't like a music video brief went out. It was, we knew that the Fruit Bats had a new album out. So I think, yeah, we just got on their website and we're like, let's see if they need a video. And that actually worked out great. Because the singer said in all of the countless numbers of times that people have just, you know, blindly sent him something, he has never, like, seen any work that he ever, like, wanted to, you know, pursue with any of these people. But our, you know, our contacting him out of the blue actually turned into a video with a budget, which, you know, I think we were really fortunate that it worked out that way. But... So sometimes it works. Sometimes you reach out to bands and they like what you have to sell and they go to their label and get you some money. And that was one of those cases.
Nice. And so you said that video had a large budget because it's such an... I want you just describe a little bit of what the video is and kind of the concept behind it because it's a hard one to describe.
I don't know if it had... I definitely didn't say it had a large budget. Oh. It wasn't a large budget by any means. I've yet to work on a video that I would describe as having a large budget.
No Michael Bay style stuff
with
yet.
That video, what's that?
No Michael Bay, you know, like Bat Out of Hell kind of videos yet?
Not yet. I'm waiting. I got so close recently. I don't know if I should talk about it or not. Oh, you definitely should. Like,
I'd say you should.
I'll talk about that in a minute. It was like my life-affirming moment that didn't happen. Anyway, the Fruit Bats video, though, was we kind of want to do this like Viking funeral idea. Also, another theme that we wanted to play off of being kids from the mid-South. Oklahoma's not technically the South because we were neutral in the Civil War, but, you know, I don't know what it's considered. Oklahoma, Texas. The other Adam's from Texas. So we're in the Bible Belt, right? We want to do a video that has something to do with that sort of look, the sort of, like, evangelical Christian setting, faith healing, whatever. So, which, by the way, I just watched one of your picks, your video picks, the Doug Pound edited video. Kind of a similar looking
I was just thinking that, actually, now that you mention it.
Theirs is a better video, but yeah, a similar aesthetic. Anyway, so we want to do this video that takes place in a church with maybe like a faith healer. And then it gets really psychedelic. And then, yeah, it was also one of those weird storyline things where, like, well, it'll look like it's a church service with like a potluck dinner. And then eventually you'll figure out that it's a funeral. But it's like, well, that's not enough of like a twist. So it needs to get weirder at the end. So it'll turn into this like Viking funeral where they like burn his casket at the end. And originally we were going to actually like have them carry the casket out to a body of water and sort of like set it off to be free. But quickly found that to be prohibitively expensive. As I said, it was not a large budget. So since we couldn't actually cast the casket.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, go ahead.
So you just threw it in the back of the truck and that was...
Yeah, that's the chief alternative is... I don't know if there's been a Viking funeral like that where you just set it on the back of the pick.
It fits in, though, because it fits in with the kind of like the theme that you've set up with like the Bible Belt church. And then, yeah, just throw it in the back of the pickup truck and we'll bring this flaming casket down the road. I think it's very appropriate. Yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Sorry, go ahead, Ryan.
No, that's all I was going to say is, you know, I think if there's any secret formula to our videos, it's like try to make it weird, try to give it a twist, and then try to give it a bigger, weirder twist at the end.
Now, you you mentioned the Michael Jackson Superfans documentary. In terms of other projects, anything? What else have you got going on?
Let's see. There's the Michael Jackson project, which... It just turned, like, everything about that turned out too weird to not finish that project. Like, every moment of that day that I was like, it would be really hilarious if this thing happened. But I don't want to, like, overproduce it, and I don't want to, like, you know, feel like I'm having a heavy hand with these people and making them do these kind of ridiculous things. But all those things just started happening on their own. Like... I had the people meet at Michael Jackson's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And before I could try to coax them into doing it, they were all like arm in arm praying to Michael Jackson, like crying and singing We Are the World, just creating like the weirdest sort of scene on Hollywood Boulevard and people just snapping all these photos of these people.
Have you found any of the photos online yet or anything like that?
I haven't. I should... I mean, there's so much weird stuff that was going on post Michael Jackson's death that it might be hard to specifically isolate these
people. But you can find 1,000 pictures that look like that.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, so there's that project, which I still have high hopes for. At the end of the month, oddly, I am directing a commercial with Ben Stein, which should be fun, kind of unexpected.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's not Clear Eyes, is it?
Ben Stein. It is not a Clear Eyes campaign.
Does it have Shaq in it too?
It could. I haven't written that part in yet.
Oh, Sweet.
But I like that idea.
Well, he did the thing with the Comcast with Ben Stein, right?
Shaq and Ben Stein. Comcast.
Okay. I've been meaning to go back and reference everything that was not clear eyes.
Yeah.
Should I tell my what was story?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, it makes me look really pathetic because someone actually got this video and, you know, but that's okay. Whatever.
You can just tell us and we'll cut it out, too.
I really don't have a huge problem with it. This is actually a video for Kesha.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, when you start talking Kesha, that's like budget kind of numbers that a person like myself doesn't get to see very often. So it was like this insane budget that comes through. And I don't know what the people at the label saw, that they're like, Ryan would be perfect for a Kesha video. But I'm glad they did, and I hope they continue to send those kinds of treatments my way, those tracks my way. But this was right before Christmas, so I get this Kesha track, and I'm pretty pumped, thinking like, this is kind of a long shot for me because I haven't really done pop videos before. So I write this idea, and, you know, it just seemed like a real shot in the dark. And then I go home, back to Oklahoma for Christmas, where my parents live in pretty, like I said, it's like Pizza Hut and Sonic. It's pretty rural. And I'm basically cut off from the world. My iPhone sometimes gets a bar of reception when I'm there. And so one day I did get that one bar of reception and had like 20 emails come in about like, Ryan, where are you? Kesha needs to talk to you today. They're like really frantic emails with a lot of exclamation points. And like, so I quickly, you know, got into the nearest town. And as it turned out, she was not available to talk that day. And then I was supposed to talk to her like a few days later, and that got pushed back. And then it kept on getting pushed back. And eventually they were like, yeah, we've actually totally changed the concept and we're doing something else. But man, it was like, for that little glimmer, there was like that brief moment where I was like, man, I'm going to do a Kesha video.
Now,
my heart is broken right now.
Now, was it for Blow or was it for We Are Who We Are?
No, it was for Blow.
I'm really impressed that Adam just got those names off the top of his head. By the way,
I can name the last two Kesha songs that music videos that came out. It's true.
Didn't Joseph Kahn did the one before, right? And then
I think Blow was Chris Pilero or
Chris Mars. I haven't met the guy, but yeah, mm-hmm. Perillo.
Something. We'll put it on the site. I don't think it's up there right now, but yeah, it's I think I've seen it. It looks like it was definitely a large budget music videos, as are most of her productions. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the like the painful things that I'm sure I'm not the only music video director that does this. I'm sure this is quite commonplace, but that thing where you torture yourself, like when you wrote a treatment that you feel really good about and then you didn't get that video, and then you go back and like watch what video did get made for the song. It's always like a really painful moment, but you have to live it just to know like, what should I have written?
That is that's a very sort of singular director moment. I think that's like a rite of passage almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a quick turnaround too with a music video, unlike like a movie. Like you didn't get a film; it's like another year and a half. It's like six days later, and
absolutely. But yeah, if I had gotten the Kesha video, it would have saved me that thing where people are like, "Well, have you done a video for anyone I've ever heard of?" And then I have to kind of go through this. Well, probably not. Like. Yeah, I don't know. Depending on the audience, I'm like, yeah, no, you probably haven't heard of anyone. But if I had Kesha, I'd be like, you know, that one pop star with a dollar sign in her name.
Well, I was looking at the thing in, you know, your bio, and it said, crab boats on the Alaskan Bering Sea. And I'm like, I can't be Deadliest Catch. And I was like, oh my God, it actually is Deadliest Catch. I mean, that's gotta be some major street cred. Cause that's not like a shoot with like craft services or anything like that. You guys are out there on that boat, like going nuts.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that, in my career, if like I was looking for just high fives, like I've already earned like a lifetime of high fives from working on that show. Like, you know, people, I remember like driving into Texas one time, and I think someone at our table mentioned to our waiter that I'd worked on the show, and I got like free nachos. It was like a really weird, like, glimpse of what it would be like to be a celebrity.
That's nacho
in like a really scaled down way, like when you work on a show that people know about. Yeah, I bet celebrities get free nachos like all the time.
All the time. They don't even want them. There are places that aren't even a proprietor of nachos, and they're just getting nachos. It's really awesome.
Make this man some nachos.
Yeah. And I mean, my father has gotten like way too much traction out of that story too. Out of not the nacho story, but out of just my having worked on Deadliest Catch.
Now, I know it's not music video related, but how long were you out there for?
I worked on it for 2 seasons, but I was really like shooting camera for one of those. The other time I was back in Burbank doing boring stuff. I was probably up there for 6 months total. It was like 3 months on, you're home for Christmas for like a week, and then you go back up for 3 more months.
That's hardcore.
It was hardcore. I don't even try to downplay how hardcore it was. Like I try to be all, you know, I don't like to be a braggart, but that show, it's awful. It's like a terrible, painful show to work on, and they make you do really scary things as a camera person.
Well, Ryan, I know we've taken up a bunch of your time, so I want to say, you know, thanks so much for talking to us. This has been awesome. Like I said, we love the videos. We love, you know what you're doing, and thanks a lot for hanging out.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna cut it right there.
Yeah. I figured.
Well, Ryan is a pretty awesome guy. I really enjoyed talking to him, and I can't believe he worked on Deadliest Catch. I know that's, he probably gets this all the time, but it's one of those shows that where you'll find fans of it from all walks of life, and it's one of those things that you watch it and you're like, oh, these camera guys must be so hardcore, and then to run into one is pretty cool.
He's the fucking hardcorest.
And I think that hardcore definitely comes across in the videos, because if you're going to get women to like dump like beans on them,
gosh,
then you got to be hardcore.
I meant to ask him what that process was like. Let's get him back on the phone.
Okay.
And we'll
ask. We should ask him, because I was wondering about that, cuz like you, and we're talking about, if for people that don't know, we're talking about the Grum Can't Shake This Feeling video, where these women are in bathing suits and they're just eating this food. And all of it is stuff that you'd want to eat really fast, like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Like, who wouldn't want to just stuff those in your face?
Yeah, donuts and stuff, right? Marshmallows. God, why did we cover this stuff? I was completely... Ryan, when you listen to this, please comment, tweet, email, something. Give these poor interview website guys some insight on that, because we are shitty and forgot to ask a really awesome question.
But why,
legitimately, please do this.
Like, who, like, does a woman get like the shortest straw that has to like eat beans? Does she really love beans? There's a world of questions. But anyway, we got to get those out of our head, because we covered a lot of awesome ground with Ryan.
We did.
Great, we just have to appreciate ground. We just have to appreciate it.
We'll bring him back or something, because I feel like such an asshole that we didn't cover that stuff. Seriously, let's get him back on the phone.
Okay.
Here to...
Let's do Picks of the Week. Doug, you have an amazing track record of miraculously picking the people who are going to be on the podcast next week. So, who's your pick this time?
All right, so this is a lot of responsibility. Man, who do I pick to really get them? Try to get them on the show. Gosh. All right, I'm going to go with Manchester Orchestra, Shake It Out, for my pick of the week.
Nice choice.
And the director is Isaac Rentz. And let's see if it works. Let's see if my surf ninja power works. God, I hope somebody picks up on that reference. Great, great video for Pick of the Week. Manchester Orchestra, Shake It Out. Manchester Orchestra is a really awesome band, and the music video is equally as awesome. It's basically over the top, but a music video. I mean, anything else I could say to preface it, it's just going to take away from its awesomeness. You just got to watch this video. It's a really awesome video, really awesome song, really awesome director that I'm rolling the dice on, thinking maybe he'll be on next week. We'll see what happens.
Isaac, if you're out there, come on, just give us a call. Call us on our cell phones, beep us on our pagers. Do whatever you got. Get in touch with us, and it's going down next week.
Just page us 411.
That's Doug's line.
What?
That's Doug's line.
Yeah, page us. Come on.
Last week I picked something that was a little more whimsical. It was the BPA and David Byrne's song Toe Jam with a lot of scantily clad women. And today I'm going... with a different type of video, and I think one that's really difficult to do, or an emotion that's really difficult to get across in a video, and that's sort of sentimentality. And I think when a lot of videos try to do that, they have a hard time. It's really hard to get across. And I think it's really kind of an emotional video, is the video for Bright Eyes, First Day of My Life. It takes a concept that's been done before in music videos and kind of switches it around. If you've ever seen the concept of going around and playing the song to people in headphones, for instance, the Cakes Short Skirt Long Jacket video is just that, them going around and playing the song for people and them reacting to it. But this time, you know, if you don't know the song First Day of My Life, it's kind of a soft love song. And what they did was they basically sat different people down on a couch and filmed them with headphones on listening to the song. And it's really a beautifully, beautifully done video. And I know we talk about a lot of videos that are sort of quirky and funny, but this is a video that really gets emotional, and does it in a really sort of poignant way. So you gotta watch it. There's a lot of sort of different surprises. It kind of plays with the lyrics of the song a little bit, and the director is John Cameron Mitchell, who's a fantastic director and did this awesome video. So it's Bright Eyes, First Day of My Life, and it's on the site.
And I won another week's Pick of the Week. My video wins again. It's an awesome video, but a fucking Manchester Orchestra in this bitch, right? Come on.
You know what, viewers or listeners?
The viewers, too.
The viewers, too. Whatever. If you're outside my apartment watching me record this, just go on our Facebook page. And I got to make sure that's all set up right, because Facebook did something weird to it. Go to our Facebook page, talk about which pick of this week won. Was it Bright Eyes, First Day of My Life, or...
Manchester Orchestra, Shake It Out. Says the guy who's like, oh, Facebook updates their fan page. And it's something weird. That's my impression of Adam. I do a really bad impression.